When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Shoots it, deflected right in. Pietrangelo save rebound. Stastny stopped by Pietrangelo. I don't believe that save. Neither does Peter Stastny. He can't believe the save that Pietrangelo just made on him as Frankie sparkling on that maneuver there to stop and rob Peter Stastny. He should get 5-10 for that.
Hello and welcome to episode 119 of Tendy Talk, presented by the Hockey Podcast Network and the BLPA Podcast Network. I'm your host, Joe, better known as Wash Up Goalie on social media. This week, I chat with legendary mask painter Frank Cipra. We talk about so many of the iconic masks that he painted that I don't want to waste any more time with an intro. So without further ado, let's get to the conversation with Frank. Frank, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it. We've had some scheduling and now technology issues, so I'm glad we're able to make it work.
Yeah,
so... You know, I asked everybody the same question, and, you know, before we get into the mask, you know, I like to ask, how'd you get into the game of hockey? You know, you're originally from Canada, so it's kind of a birthright, but, you know, how did you get exposed to hockey and get into the great game we all know and love?
This has happened about 33 years ago. Our goaltender, who we have a traveling hockey team, and we traveled all over the country, United States, Canada, and did tournaments, played games and things like that. So anyways, we all wore the Pittsburgh Penguin sweaters, and he asked me to paint him an Eddie Belfour mean looking penguin. So, you know, needless to say, I didn't have a clue what I was doing because I was doing other graphics other than airbrushing or anything like that. So anyways, I got a few answers and went ahead and painted it, and he got such a huge response from other players and teams and stuff like that. And they said, well, where'd you get your mask painted? And he said, well, that guy sitting right over there did it for me. So anyways, back then I was doing, I was working for printing companies and advertising agencies, and things weren't, you know, very challenging for me. So I approached my wife, and after the good response that we had, I asked her, I said, you know what, I'd really like to pursue this as a career. And she looked at me kind of funny and she says, well, give it a try. You know, it was in the infancy of the of mask painting. So went ahead and contacted Jerry Wright and met with him, and we hit it off right off the bat. So he says, you know, he says, I can't really guarantee how many masks I'm going to get for you, but he says, let's give it a try. So anyways, I painted a couple of masks. And this went on for about a month. And then about a month later, he called me back up. He says, look, he says, I just signed an exclusive deal with ITAC Hockey in Montreal. And he says, why don't you go and meet with them and see if they can do anything for you as well? So I thought, well, why not? So I met with Robin Burns, who was the president of ITAC at the time. And he says the same thing. He says, well, let's give it a try. He said it was in its infancy at the time of mask painting. So he said, let's give it a try and see where it goes. So I got a few masks, a couple junior masks. And all of a sudden, it was back in 1992 when the Olympics were starting, and the Team USA needed some masks, three at the time. And so I got a call from ITAC, and they said, look, we've got these masks for Team USA. We want you to paint them. I said, okay, when do you need them? And this was a Friday afternoon. And he says, we need him back by Monday. I said, really? He goes, yep. So he says, so I said, okay, I'll do them. You know, what can it hurt? So drove to Montreal, picked up the masks, drove back home, stripped them, prepped them, painted them. No sleep from Friday night till Monday morning. Drove back to Montreal, delivered the masks, and came back home.
How far of a drive was that for you?
That's about 2.5 hours either way.
That's a minimum of 8 hours out of your work time on the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, no sleep.
Yeah.
You know, I got these three masks painted and they got the masks. They were happy. Came home and I crashed. Like I slept for like 3 days. It was incredible. But in the long run, it all worked out. So after that, but a week later, after the Olympics were completed, I got my first two NHL masks, which was Grant Fuhr and Ron Hextall in the same week.
Well, that Team USA mask you painted was Ray LeBlanc's, who had a fantastic Olympic, and everybody loved it. You know, with the eagles and the stripes coming down, and USA hockey on that bubble chin of that. Those bubble chins are highly sought after now. You know, so not only did you get the masks to him, but probably, if I don't remember right, wasn't Ray voted like player of the Olympics for hockey too?
He was. Wow. Yeah, he was. And that helped me as well, you know, because that mask was shown all over the world and featured everywhere in print media, you know, TV, you name it, it was there, front and center.
You know, and then he comes back, and like you said, you get Grant Fuhr's, and that was when he was in Toronto, correct?
Yes. That's another story. If you want to hear that one.
Oh, I'd love to.
Okay. So anyways, got the call that Grant Fuhr needed a mask for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So he gave me some ideas of what he wanted. He wanted something kind of creepy, like a castle with wolves and stuff like that, and some filigree through it. And I'm going, okay, it's not really Toronto Maple Leafs, but you know, you're the customer. So anyways, same deal. Painted it all up. Drove to Toronto in a freezing ice storm. It was treacherous. Delivered the mask. Drove back home. Next day, he was traded to Buffalo. So he wore it once in practice. So he still has the mask.
Yeah. And
but yeah,
at least when he got to Buffalo, did they call you again and say, hey, he needs a mask again? Or
it was the trend. But I was so used to it, and I loved what I did. And I still love what I do today. I'm still painting.
Now, you said the other mask was for Ron Hextall, and he had some great masks. I'm trying to remember which one it would have been at that time. What was on that mask?
It was the polar bear.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that was when he was in Quebec then, right?
Yes, with the Nordiques.
Yeah. That was another great mask he did. That's the problem. I go through your catalog of masks, and it's hard to pick out a favorite because there's so many what I call iconic masks. I'm a 90s goalie, and I loved that 90s style where, you know, you could tell what it was from the stands. You didn't have to be right on top of it. You know, I'm not knocking some of the mask artists of today because they're beautiful, but some of the detail, you have to be right up on top of it to see it. Whereas
you do.
The 90s, you could be sitting in the stands. You could identify the mask. You could see what was on there. You know, but not so much today.
No. And that was my thing too. You know, when I did paint a mask and when I designed it, I wanted people to see it from the stands, you know, like, you know, five rows up and stuff like that. But also in print media too, you could identify the goalie with the mask and you could see the detail in it. You know, there wasn't much detail as there is now. Like right now, the masks are just way overboard, and there's so much detail. You have to be, like you said, right on top of it to see it. And really, I don't know. I'm not a fan of it, but you know, customer, he's always right.
For me, I would say I appreciate the artistry of it, but it's not my style.
No, No, I'm old school. I'll stay that way. So.
Yeah. Now, and for the people listening to the podcast, you know, you're painting masks, but you never played goalie, but you still played hockey, you know, so that's kind of how it all ties in. It's not like a Don Strauss who is in the auto industry and just a buddy of his is like, hey, can you do something different for me?
Yeah. No, I love the game. It was kind of cool too. You know, I combine the passion, my passion for hockey and the passion of doing artwork in that type of medium. So it all fell into place and you know, I still love it.
You know, you talked about, you know, the first masks, you know, and I'll just call it the iTech mask because it's still the model that Bauer uses today, that look.
Yes.
It's kind of crazy that for your whole career, that's kind of been the standard, you know, that most goalies look for is that iTech mask. I mean, there's still some great ones out there. You got the Warwicks and the Pro's Choice and some of those. But that iTech mask has stayed the same for the most part that whole time you've been painting for, you know, we'll say 3 decades now.
It has stayed the same. And I was assigned exclusively to paint for iTech. And I wasn't really, say, allowed to paint for anybody else. So,
yeah.
But now, I was busy. I was working 7 days a week, 24/7.
I had to laugh when we originally were going to record. I just unknowingly threw on a t-shirt that day, and it happened to be my Minnehaha Waves t-shirt from the Mighty Ducks, and then I remembered, oh yeah, you also painted that mask for, you know, the about 4 seconds it was seen in the movie.
Yes. Again, we did, oh jeepers, maybe 6 masks for the second movie. Mm-hmm. And the 2 goalies for the Mighty Ducks, they wore their masks in the movie, and there were other teams like Iceland and I think Jamaica, I think. I forget.
But anyways, Trinidad and Tobago.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah, like they play hockey down there. But it was fun, you know. I got to see the movie, and my kids were over the top because they could see the masks in the movie and things like that. But for me, it was just another job.
Now, when you got into mask painting, you know, what was one of the things that surprised you about the process? Because like you said, you know, you were in the printing business, you were, you know, artistic, you know, but what is it about mask painting that, you know, maybe us goalies who think, hey, I want to get it done, would surprise them?
It's the thing of it is you're painting on a 3-dimensional object, you know, with mm-hmm. vent holes and clips and straps that you have to contend with and make sure that the image is front and center. You know, your main focal point is visible. And that was key for me, too. And I think it is for most artists out there, too. They're still creating goalie masks. But and doing the research for these things, like back when I first started, there was no internet. You couldn't Google anything for images or mm-hmm. or anything. I had to go to the library and find, you know, historic things and things that the guys wanted on their masks. So it was a challenge, but again, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I loved it.
You talk about it being a 3-dimensional canvas and those vent holes, and I've seen even at the NHL level some designs where the painter didn't take those vent holes into account, and it almost ruins the look when they don't pay attention to that little bit of detail. It's like a logo just gets knocked out, or it's like half of somebody's face is missing because of that vent hole.
Oh, it drives me crazy. You know, I see some of these masks that are being produced, and I'm going, okay, why did you do it this way? Why not just shift it over just a bit, you know, that you could see the eyeball of the eagle, or, you know, the strap wasn't covering the eagle's face, or you got to plan ahead, way ahead.
I forget the painter's name, but the person who's been doing Jacob Markstrom's masks, and they've been taking the time to actually airbrush the straps themselves so that, you know, you were probably the first one to airbrush the cage on Cujo's to match the design. Now that particular right. painter is spray painting the or airbrushing the straps to blend in with the design as well, so that it's not sticking out.
It looks great, but it's a lot of friggin' work, and yeah, it's not noticeable, you know? You know, I think it's, I forget the gentleman's name that's painting for Markstrom, but he does phenomenal work. Like his attention to detail is incredible. And I'm a huge fan of him. But there again, you know, he's got so much involved in the artwork. I don't know if he has time to sleep or even breathe, but like these things are time consuming, and the amount of time that he spent on that, it's, it must be phenomenal. Incredible.
Yeah. I do appreciate that on social media, he does time-lapse videos of those masks. Mm-hmm. I think for, you know, the young goalies out there, it's good for them to see the amount of work that goes into these designs. So when they look at mom and dad and they're like, hey, I want a new mask. And, you know, you're not Carey Price or Roberto Luongo, so you're not going to get a special one every, you know, 8 to 10 games. It's like, okay, yeah, but this mask is going to be your mask for probably the next 4 to 5 years till you move up a level. You know, it's, there's so much to it that I think the average goalie forgets about when they're like, yeah, let's change it up.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, there's so much detail involved and it's very time consuming. People don't really realize what all goes into it. And just briefly, it's just a story. I was at the All-Star game back in 2001 at the in Denver, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And there again, I was front and center and explaining it to people. There was 85,000 people that came through, and I think I spoke to every one of them. And there's one lady came up to me. She says, "Oh, I thought it was done by a machine." I said, no, it's all done by hand. It's, you know, it's all done by me.
Yeah.
And there was like, I had masks all lined up, you know, showing step by step by step and explaining it to these people. I had a blast, and people like were, I don't know, kind of in awe of what went the process that had to be done to get to the final product.
Yeah. I remember the All-Star game when it was in Minnesota. I didn't have kids yet at that time, so I took my nephew, who was probably in like the second or third grade. I took him out of school for the day and took him down to the Fan Fest. It's crazy.
Okay, I was there.
He now has kids of his own, and well, maybe it was you then that was painting masks. I was trying to remember who was there. Was somebody over by the you're sitting there painting masks.
That was me.
I was standing in line waiting to get my picture at the Stanley Cup, and my nephew had to keep tapping me on the shoulder. He's like, "All right, we're moving along." And I'm just standing there watching you paint. I wish we would have had more time there so I could just, you know, watched the whole process. But yeah, you were
right. Those
trophies.
Yeah, those times are fun. They were a lot of fun meeting all the people at the All-Star events.
Yeah, and that was a fun day. I still remember I took him out of school, and like you said, he's like second grader, and I took him to Chipotle, and the kid ordered, you know, the massive burrito, and I'm thinking, I'll be lucky if he eats half of it. 5 minutes, he had eaten the whole thing. I'm looking at him like, where did you put that? You know, the burrito is half the size of you, and you ate it in 5 minutes. I was figuring he was going to get a stomach ache when we got to the Fan Fest or something, but nope. And then the local Fox affiliate had the little deal where you could sit down behind the camera and do a, you know, intro or something. And Lou Nanny happened to sit down for a couple fans, and my nephew is, you know, one of the fans, and they sent you home with the VHS tape. So this is telling you how long ago it was. And Lou looks at him and he goes, "So what grade are you?" And he goes, "It's second grade." And Lou looks at him and goes, "Ah, that was my favorite grade. I liked it so much, I did it twice." So yeah, that was a fun day. And the NHL did a good job with that Fan Fest. And I say that because I went to the Stadium Series last year in Raleigh, and they had a Fan Fest outside, and it was pitiful compared to what that All-Star Fan Fest was. I mean, yeah, they had the Stanley Cup.
Oh, that's too bad.
You know, it was okay because we really just wanted to go see the Stanley Cup. And so we got the pictures there, and then kind of walked around and got some food. But the cool thing they had is they had a semi with kind of the history of the game. I believe it was the UKIM Hockey's for Everybody truck. So talking about, you know, the minorities in the game, the girl, you know, explosion of girls hockey. And one of the masks there was one of yours, Grant Fuhr's mask.
Oh, really?
So I was looking at that, looking at all of the chip marks, you know, from the pucks on it. So that was fun to see. Of course, I gravitated to the goalie stuff. And then they had a pair of Kevin Weeks pads in there. And yeah, that's what I gravitated towards.
Sweet.
So, you know, like I said, you've painted so many, and I don't use this term lightly, iconic masks. As I'm just scrolling through, you've got Cujo's, you've got, you know, some of Fuhr's masks, you got Rick DiPietro, so many of his. I loved his because he always paid tribute to the military. You did Corey Hirsch's mask too, the Haunted House one, didn't you?
Yes, I did. That was... I didn't know at the time, but Corey was going through a difficult time mm-hmm. in his career, in his life. And he called me up and he said, I want to do something kind of dark. So I kind of go, okay, where are we going to go with this? He says, I want something like a horror theme. I said, for the Vancouver Canucks? He says, yeah. So I don't know why, but the Haunted Mansion from Psycho. With Norman Bates and his mother, and that popped into my head right off the bat. And I said that to him, and he says, "Yeah, let's do it." I said, "Okay." So hung out the phone and go, "Okay, how the hell am I going to pull this off?" So, anyways, went to the public library, found a picture of Norman's house, and put mother in the window where she always sat, and. Also, I put Alfred Hitchcock in the center of the mask, just above the cage line, because he always had a cameo appearance in all his movies. So mm-hmm. he had a cameo on Corey's mask. So, and this is the first time I ever really signed the outside of the mask. I put my initials in the brickwork of the steps going up to the Haunted Mansion. So, yeah. Yeah, there's always a story behind that, each and every mask. Going back to Rick DiPietro, again, he called me up. He says, what are we going to do? So I said, you guys play at the Nassau Coliseum, Veterans Nassau Coliseum. And he says, yeah. I said, why not pay a tribute to the vets? And he popped up and he says, my dad was a helicopter pilot in Vietnam. He says, can we fit that in somehow? I said, absolutely. So... did the military theme with the stars and stripes, and just went a little overboard with the design, and added, you know, the boots and the helmet, the helicopter with his dad's flight number on the side of it, and just went to town on it, and it turned out great. I loved it. It's one of my favorites.
It's a beautiful helmet. But what I love about yours, you know, is I scroll through, you know, you got a guy like Razor, his Ottawa mask with the boxers, because he loved boxing. Clearly it showed, because if anybody dropped the gloves with him, he just smiled at him and beat the nuts out of him. So it was fitting he had those guys on there. You know, but Cujo, I'm almost shocked that Cujo didn't have a dog on his mask sooner. Although that original St. Louis mask of his was pretty iconic, but that dog mask, it was just like, how is it not that sooner, really?
I think he got his nickname in St. Louis when he first got there, I believe. But yeah, that mask that was done for him with the dog on it, to this day, I still think I hate it the most. It's just brutal. I hate that. It's just not enough detail in it. Not like his Toronto Maple Leafs masks. Mm-hmm. Where the design changed. And I asked him, I said, can I change that darn friggin' thing? It's just god-awful ugly. So he says, yeah, go ahead. Change it up if you want. So that's what I did.
So you're saying you hated the original Cujo mask, but liked the evolutions of it afterwards. Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, the thing of it is, I kind of got better as I went along, you know, paint-wise and design-wise. So, yeah, like I'm learning every day, still to this day, something new.
I remember some of those Toronto Cujo masks had some almost like mirrored paint in there. So it was shinier than normal. It had some reflectiveness to it. That was pretty cool too.
It was, yeah, it was that little touch of silver in the background and then just overshadowed with a touch of blue, and it just popped. That was by accident. Charlie, it was by accident that happened, but it turned out okay.
Yeah, as Bob Ross would say, happy accident.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
So you also did Jocelyn Thibault's gargoyle mask, didn't you?
Yes. Theodore's?
Theodore, that's what I meant. When he started in Montreal, did he already have the gargoyle, or is that something you guys just kind of came up with and it stuck with him? It was like his thing then.
There again, I met with him at iTech in Montreal, and we sat down and we hashed out some ideas. And I thought, you know, I'm going back and thinking about the old churches in Montreal with the gargoyles, you know, hanging off the side of the building. And I thought, you know, they were the protectors of the church. So I thought, why not the gargoyle protector of the net? Mm-hmm. So that's what we ran with the gargoyle theme on the masks and going from there.
And it works so well in Montreal, you know, just that cathedral of a building that they have.
It did. So much sense. I
want to ask this one. What's your favorite mask from another mask painter, design-wise?
You know what? The reason why I got into the business is all because of Greg Harrison. He's my idol. I worship the guy. And it was when he created Eddie Belfour's mask for the Chicago Blackhawks with the bald eagle, and his Felix Boffin mask for the Toronto Maple Leafs. There again, you know, they were bold. They were upfront designs. You could see it from a distance. You knew what it was. And that set me off. And to this day, I still worship the man. And it's because of him that I'm doing this.
Well, and those are two masks that you see replicated at the beer league level all the time. You know,
they're iconic.
I've talked to so many goalies and they love the Potvin mask. Now, I grew up an Eddie Belfour fan, so I couldn't stand that Felix Potvin mask because that's what he was wearing when he played in Toronto and beat the Blackhawks. Also, why, no offense, I never really liked the Cujo masks because he was beating the Blackhawks in the playoffs. But I've grown an appreciation for him since their retirement. So that I'll put it that way. And as much as I didn't like the players at the time, I always liked the artwork on their masks. You know, it was pretty interesting. I had a chance to talk to Todd Miska a number of years ago. And I remember talking to him about the Eddie mask, because he painted some of the variations of Eddie's masks. You know, the one where he incorporated the eagle wording into the feathering. You know, and he talked about other mask painters taking his work and replicating it, and, you know, kind of his feelings of it. And it was kind of a double-edged sword, because he said he was always flattered that they wanted to do it, but he always wished that they would at least reach out for permission to do it. How do you feel about other painters taking something you've done and replicating it for somebody?
You know what? It is flattering, and I don't mind when other guys do it. But what ticks me off, and it's happened to other artists like Todd and Greg Harrison, is these guys that are creating these masks at you know, multiple numbers, and then turning around and selling it for exorbitant amounts of money, and people out there that are purchasing these things are getting ripped off. And I hate to see that happen to people, but, you know, buyer beware, let's put it that way.
Yep. Yeah. There's a fellow out there that does that. I believe he has them all mass painted overseas, saying that they're replicas, but they're barely street hockey level masks to begin with.
Oh, they're brutal.
And they're brutal. when when you look at the painting itself, it's like they're, you know, I think back to like when Franklin was putting out street hockey equipment, and they would replicate very poorly some of these designs, and they were poor replications because of copyright issues. But it's like those were almost better quality than what this particular person's putting out, and people are paying, you know, good amount of money. And I'm looking at going, you could buy a game ready mask painted by that person's mask painter for less money.
Yep. You could,
you know, it's like you said, buyer beware. But yeah, I get that. And I forget who it was. I think it may have been Don Strauss. You know, basically sent him a cease and desist order for the work he was trying to replicate of his. Like, you know, I'll let other people do it for actual goalies and fans, but I'm not going to let you do it to make money off my artwork. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. As a Hawks fan with Connor Bedard still on the shelf with his fractured jaw, I would not be hitting the over on any Hawks game right now. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. Have a gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available. For problem gambling, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, average varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario, bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024, all rights reserved. For mass production.
But, yeah, the thing of it is, too, is I've seen videos of guys actually wearing these masks, mm-hmm. playing hockey in games. And I'm thinking, are you crazy? You're going to kill yourself. You get a puck in the head, you're done.
You know, as we talk about iTech masks, they have that junior level mask for, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, that was basically plastic. And so many beer leaguers would still wear that mask, where today they call it the Widowmaker. You see one out there and it's like, buddy, like, I don't care if it's low level beer league. Like, that's the one piece of equipment you should be going top notch. Like, you don't need to buy pro level pads, but buy the pro level helmet and nut cup. Those are the two things you don't scrimp on.
No. And the thing of it is, too, you know, from day one, when people would ask me about goalie masks, I always say, okay, look at it this way. You're protecting the most vital part of your body. It's your mm-hmm. head. And if you don't, you know, spend the money and get what's out there, which is best, either be an iTech or a Greg Harrison mask or whatever. You know, get a fiberglass mask that has strong padding, a great cage, and it fits properly, not these pieces of garbage that you see, you know, out there. It drove me crazy.
Well, and as you mentioned, fit properly, too, because you can have a great mask, but if it's too big and jumbling around, that was the issue with this helmet of mine in college. I bought it, and it was a little too big, so it jumbled around a little bit, and that's you might as well have a cheap mask at that point, because it's not providing the proper amount of protection. Or you see the ones where they're too small and that back plate is, you know, sticking that far off of their mask. It's like, oh, come on, buddy, you're just asking for it. You know, it's not 1972 with the fiberglass, you know, Jason masks anymore. we shouldn't see that much of your hair and, you know, part of your ears sticking out from behind the mask.
Right.
Unless you had Todd Miska paint your mask and he did the, cause he was the first one to do this, the, Jerry Cheevers, where, you know, he did it for Steve Shields, or is the Jerry Cheevers look like,
yes.
And he painted all the hair and the ears. And, I got to see that one in person in his shop. Cause before I moved down to Georgia, I lived, about 10 minutes from Todd and was able to go to his shop the one day. And I mean,
okay.
He's had so many masks there. And that was one. Well, it wasn't Steve Shields. It was the one he did for his son, Hunter, which there's a kid who he's still playing pro hockey, and he's had some very nice replica masks, and he was playing for the Colorado Eagles and had the Eddie Belfour mask. And
nice.
It was like, if you're going to see the Eddie Belfour replica mask at the pro level, that's the person that should be wearing it, painted by his dad, the guy that came up with it. It's like, all right, that made sense. And right when that happened, I had Eddie on the podcast and I had mentioned it to him. He didn't know Todd's son had made it pro yet and was wearing a replica of his mask. And he just thought that was great.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I want to be mindful of time. Gosh, we've been talking 40 minutes. It seems like it's been about 10 minutes. But knowing that you played hockey as well, so many of these questions are going to pertain to you as well. And so my first question is, from your playing days, what is the craziest coaching moment where a coach just went full on Mike Keenan and lost it?
You know what? To be honest, I'd never experienced that. Like I started late. I was 10 years old when I first started playing hockey, and just finished 8 years ago. But yeah, I never ever saw that happen. I've done it in my coaching experience.
Okay,
you know, so, I wanted to kill a referee. Yeah. But yeah, whenever I played, no, I never saw it. Never.
I believe I've told the story on the podcast where I had a coach freshman sophomore year of high school. At the time, he was going to school to get his doctorate in psychology, and he's since done so and has his own practice and everything. But we were in state playoffs. The refs were not very good that game, and he was getting frustrated. And he said a few choice words to him, and they threw him out of the game. And this is at a rink in Chicago, the old Saint Spectrum, just a dingy dump that we all loved. And he throws his clipboard, breaks over my teammate's head, and he just stomps off the bench. And the funny thing about this rink is right off the bench, they had these metal stairs that went to the second floor to a door that was, I think, welded shut. I never saw it open. So he just stomps up these stairs here, doom, 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 and he sits down and he's like pouting so he can watch the rest of the game. So couple years back, I'm now living in Minnesota, and he's in Minnesota with his family. So I meet up with him, and he's telling all kinds of not so flattering stories about me and my playing days. And I look at his three boys and I said, did your dad ever tell you about the time he got thrown out of a hockey game? And they all just, it was like the record scratch, like, wait, what? Wait a minute, what? And I knew his wife because they were dating at the time, and she may have even been at the game. And he's looking at me going, don't you dare, don't you dare. And I look over at Wendy and she goes, you've been doing it all night to him. Fair is fair. And his boys look at him, we're like, dad, you didn't stop and think about why were you feeling this way? How your actions might affect others? Like all of these classic, you know, psychology things. And he's just shaking his head like, so I tell him this, and his boys are just eating it up. They're like, no, all these years, he never told us about that one.
No.
No. Yeah, that was a fun one. So, you know, I asked the question a little bit earlier of your favorite mask by another painter, but what's your favorite all-time goalie mask? Because it might be one you've painted. What's, you know, the creme de la creme for you?
Yeah, you know, people always ask me that same question, and I said I haven't done it yet. But there is a favorite mask that I truly am proud of, is the mask I did for Jeff Hackett when he was traded from Chicago to the Montreal Canadiens. He called me up and he said, you know, what do we do for the Montreal Canadiens? You know, it's an iconic team, you know, it's been around for forever. And no kidding, there was dead silence between he and I for about 10 minutes. on the phone, and he says, "Kids playing pond hockey." I said, "Perfect." I said, "Yeah, that's where every kid got their start, either playing on the pond or out in the street or on the road playing ball hockey and stuff like that. That's where every kid got his you know, first shot." So I said, "Okay." So I hung up the phone, and I just went blank. And I didn't have a clue what the heck to do. So anyways, I went home and I told my wife about our conversation with Jeff. And she says, "Well, why don't you paint our two boys playing pond hockey? You know, put them in Montreal Canadiens jerseys." I'm not a huge Montreal Canadian fan. And it was difficult for me to do that. So I did it. And I had my son Joel on one side and my son Ian on the other side. And then I said, "Okay, what do we put on the chin?" And then my daughter, who was about 8 at the time, she says, "Well, why don't you put a puck on there with a little bit of snow on it?" I said, "Okay, why not?" So that's what I did. So I painted it up and drove to Montreal again, delivered it, and he didn't want to wear it. He says, "I can't wear it." He said, "I don't want to scratch it. I don't want any marks on it." I said, "Well, don't worry about it, Jeff. I'll paint you another one." So I ended up painting, I think, 3 of them for him. And then he got another one when he went to Boston with the same design with Boston Bruins jerseys on. But also did one for Celine Dion. She saw it on the Jumbotron. She's, "I want that mask." So got a phone call and then ended up painting one for her too.
All right. So I like that you mentioned that mask because I thought it was beautiful and I loved it. This is my college mask. And this was our logo at the time, but you can see somewhat similar because I got that idea of yours. I'm like, I love that. Now I'm wearing a Bauer mask, which is the iTech model. And it's just black right now. And I've been kind of going through my mind, what do I want to get when I finally get it painted? And I want to do something with my college and something with my high school. I'm like, well, you got the colors of maroon and orange in a Crusader and then red, white, and blue with a Cardinal. It doesn't work. And I've been having this idea of, well, what about Jeff Hackett's mask? I've got two kids, one on either side wearing my college jerseys. So I'm glad you brought that one up. I'm like, it seems like the perfect fit of, and being a Chicago kid.
You have my address, send it.
Yeah. Well, and being a kid that grew up in Chicago, I loved Eddie Belfour, but then they traded him and Jeff Hackett was the Hawks goalie. I saw him play many, many games. Yep. So, you know, he's now, did you do his beautiful Chicago mask with that headdress?
Yes.
Okay. Because yeah, that
was one of mine too.
That to me is one of the underrated best looking goalie masks of all time.
Thank you.
So well done. And I know Darren Payne kind of takes credit for that design, it being on his, but
he does. He's over it.
Yeah. Panger, keeping it, you know, his feelings to himself. I wouldn't have thought. But, you know, especially in this day and age when people are very sensitive with cultural appropriation, all of this, I thought it was so well done in a way that, you know, screamed Blackhawks, but also had this, it looked as though it was honoring, you know, the native tribes of Illinois too, the Creek and the,
right.
You know, so, you know, it's just beautiful. And I don't know if we'll ever see a Hawks mask like that again, just because of some of the standards they've put in place. I've been waiting to talk to Danny Wirtz because he himself was a goalie. So I might have to ask him that one.
Yeah, true. Well, if you get an answer, please let me know.
Yeah, because that was a beautiful mask. And again, we talk about the 90s in an era when goalies would keep the same mask, not just all year, but for multiple seasons. And that was really the only, aside from his combo when he had, you know, the old Cooper combo with the iTech neck guard, which looked awesome too. He kept that was the only thing he used in Chicago. And I thought it was great. You know, I think the last goalie to really be like that was Corey Crawford. Yeah, he had two or three different designs with the Hawks, but he would go 2-3 years with the same design. And I like
that about him. And that was Steph Bergeron out of Quebec that painted for Corey Crawford too, and he did some phenomenal masks as well.
Yeah, he's done quite a few Marc-Andre Fleury's, and I follow him on Facebook, but I don't know if I can get him on the podcast because I don't know if I could get through his broken English. Yeah, the French speaking fella. this is what I like to ask folks. What's your favorite rink that you've played at? Because we all have that one rink where it's just like, yeah, that's my rink.
I'd have to say the Joe Louis Arena. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm a huge Red Wing fan. I had the opportunity to play with them this is going back, jeepers, 24 years ago. And just before they won their first Stanley Cup back in whenever it was. Yeah.
Yep.
That was, like I was playing with him and I was playing way over my head, way over my head. But I had so much fun and met so many nice people. It was probably the best time of my life playing there.
Everybody I talked to that made it to the Joe, they'll say the same thing about a lot of those old barns is, at the end of the day, it was a bit of a dump, but it was a classic place. And it had so much character that the new buildings just don't have. And I almost made it out there. It was in that stretch when it was like the Hawks and the Red Wings were going to the conference finals against each other every year. And it would have been 1996, I think. It was going to be game 7 in Detroit. And I just graduated middle school. And a family friend of mine was at the graduation party, and we're sitting there talking, and I was like, I got enough money to buy myself a ticket. And he's like, we should get in the car and go. And, because this was, it was at the beginning of the internet. So it's not like we were going online trying to buy tickets. So like, I'm sure we could go there and scalp a ticket or two, And we were this close to just hopping in the car, making the drive from Chicago to Detroit blindly, not having tickets yet. And then it was like, probably not the smartest of ideas. I never made it to the Joe.
We ended up, like I said, with our hockey team, we ended up coming to Chicago and playing there in a tournament too, and we got to go to the old Chicago Stadium and saw two games there. Oh, what a barn. I just loved it. And we're walking through my buddy, the goaltender, we're walking through, who happened to be standing there at the one of the vendors eating a hot dog, but Stan Mikita.
Oh.
And it's like, I go, oh my god, my hero, he's standing right there. He said, well, go over and get his autograph. I was scared shitless. I couldn't go.
I had the opportunity to meet Stan and Bobby Hall. My mom was working for a Target store that was opening up. And so they're bringing Stan and Bobby in to sign autographs. And for some reason, I know why the general manager did it. My mom, he knew I played hockey. So he knew my mom knew hockey and knew who these guys were. So he had her take care of all of the scheduling of when the limo was going to pick them up and get them there. And she told her manager, but she told me it was on purpose, scheduled them to get there an hour early. So they're sitting in the manager's office an hour early. So the guy's like, well, why don't you come in and talk? So I had those two to myself for an hour, just signing autographs, talking, telling stories.
Oh, nice. Lucky you.
Stan was always great with the fans. So he was a little reserved. But back in the 70s, he was on the road and lightning struck his house while his wife was home sleeping. Started a small fire, but the Oak Brook Fire Department came, put the fire out. No big deal. After that, in the off season on Saturdays, Stan would go to the firehouse, bring some coffee, cake, and donuts, sit with guys and talk with them. At the time, my dad was on Oak Brook before he got on Chicago. So I mentioned to Stan, it's like, yeah, my dad told me he used to come to the firehouse on Saturdays. And at that, he just like lit up, remembered my dad. And then it was like, we were old pals.
That's cool.
Wow. So yeah, I had an old Titan goalie stick signed by him and Bobby that I still have out in the garage. The only problem is they signed it on opposite side of the paddles. So it's not like I can put it up on the wall then you're missing one of their signatures, but I do have a puck, which is great. But yeah, they were, they were a treat to be around for the day. So my next question in this list of questions, same 10 questions I ask every single guest. So I recently had Grant on the podcast, asked him the same ones, had Kelly Rudy and, you know, a bunch of goalies of all ages and skill levels. What's your favorite stick that you've ever used when you were a hockey player?
Favorite stick? Yeah. Probably. My mom bought me when I was 11 years old. She bought me a Northland hockey stick because all the NHL players were using a Northland. Anyways, I cut it too short and I couldn't use it. So it sat in the corner. I think I used it once and I thought, oh, shit. But anyways, other than that, I think Coho hockey sticks.
Those were good ones.
And I had, remember when Mario Lemieux had the Nike hockey stick?
Yep.
I had a bunch of those. I had about a dozen of those. They were a great stick too. But then, you know, time evolved and the aluminum stick came out and had an Easton. And then when I went with iTech, I had iTech sticks left, right, and center.
When I was coaching high school hockey,
but,
I was
I'd have to say that Northland hockey stick, it was cool.
When I was coaching high school hockey, I was telling the boys that the original aluminum sticks, you know, A, it wasn't a one piece, and B, after like every 2-3 games, you had to pop that blade out, flip the shaft around and pop it back in because it would start to curve this way, and then you'd turn it around and try and straighten it out, and they couldn't comprehend why the sticks weren't stronger. It's like, because it was new technology, but I do like that the revived Christian Hockey Stick Company is teamed up with Wayne Gretzky to sell wooden sticks branded Northland for $3 for $99 bundles in Canada to help parents with younger kids. Like, hey, sticks are expensive, and if they're nights and squirts, you know, you don't need to be buying these big expensive ones. Here's a affordable option for you. And some of my beer league teammates are like, well, can they do that for us older guys too? We're okay using a wooden stick. So what is your favorite youth hockey memory?
Youth hockey number?
Memory.
Number youth 8.
Okay. Awesome. Well, this is good. That is one of the questions.
Memory?
But no, the number is a good one, 'cause I do ask that later on. So number 8, but why number 8?
That was my son's number too, when he first started playing hockey too. So yeah, I gravitated to that. And then, after that, I did 44 and still wear number 44. Why? I don't know.
It just works. Sometimes it just works.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah, but the original question is, what's your favorite youth hockey memory from, you know, those early days?
Jeez. To be honest, I was a lousy hockey player when I was a kid. Like I said, I started late when I was 10. It was the year back in 68 when my dad passed away. And it was hard, and my mom raised me and my two sisters all by herself, and I wanted to play hockey so bad. So anyways, I got some used hockey gear and had the opportunity to play, and I'd have to attribute that to my mom for allowing me to play hockey my first year when I was 10 years old, and I'll always remember that.
That's awesome. You know, and those hockey moms are something else. All the stuff they did behind the scenes that we never even realized.
And we took it for granted too. Yeah. I look back and I'm going, you're such a dick, you know, you know, appreciate what your mom did for you when you're a kid.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. So this is the one I like to ask people, what's the best chirp you heard on the ice, off the ice, directed at you? Not directed at you. Maybe you're the one that gave it.
Are we allowed to swear on this?
We sure can. Yeah.
Okay. The best chirp I ever heard was a buddy of mine who's on our traveling team. And we're playing this game. The bunch of young guys were out there and they're showing off and being goofballs. Anyways, one buddy on my team, he's just comical as all get out. He says, "Hey, kid," he says, "you could have been my kid." He says, "but the neighbor dog jumped the fence and beat me to it."
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, yeah. I'll never forget that one.
So knowing you played, senior hockey, they call it senior hockey in Canada. We call it beer league hockey down here in the States. What's the worst post-game beer you've had?
Sorry, say that again?
The worst post-game beer.
I think Molson X, and it was warm. They didn't even put it in a cooler or anything like that. So, but the other boys drank it. I didn't.
The warm beer is what it does it for me. It's like
Stubby bottles. Remember those little brown stubby bottles?
Yeah. Hard to get the cap off because the neck was so short. So when you taped your sick, did you go heel to toe? When you taped your sick, did you go heel to toe or toe to heel?
Toe to heel.
Toe to heel. Okay. So in
always,
if you were a goalie, I would say you're in the minority, but you were a forward. So that makes sense.
No, a defenseman. Always a defenseman.
See, us goalies view anybody that isn't a goalie as a forward.
Okay.
But you were a defenseman. So you were one of our friends. So that makes me wonder, did you use white tape or black tape?
White.
Okay.
On the blade and the butt end.
When I was coaching, I always told my defense when they needed to use white tape so that their goalie could see if they were picking up the puck on a rebound or not. And I always told my forwards, you use black tape so that the goalie can't see the puck as well coming off your blade. Whether or not it worked, I don't know, but it sure made sense to me. So the last question, this is always my favorite one. What advice do you have for young hockey players?
Be passionate about the sport and look after your teammates. Play your position well. Give it 100% every time you're out there. Hockey is such a fun game, and you meet a lot of people, and you create friendships that will last a lifetime. Hockey's it for me.
I agree. I moved down to Atlanta early this summer, and it's because of hockey that I now know people outside of my house. And there are people that I would not hesitate calling for help with anything day or night. And it's because of this great game.
Yeah, they're always there for you.
Yeah, always. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So hopefully you'll get another NHL team there in Atlanta.
That's my hope, because where they're proposing to put the rink is 4 miles from my house.
Did you hear what I said?
Yeah, I'm hoping, because that rink will be 4 miles from my house. So I'm
really
for it. Yeah. And there's been a lot of discussion whether or not Atlanta deserves a team for a third time, but I think it was The Athletic had an article explaining why it makes sense. You know, the Flames didn't work because it was too soon, and the Thrashers didn't work because the location of the arena, being downtown Atlanta with our horrible traffic. If you want to go to a game on a Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, you got to leave work at noon just to have a chance to get there. Whereas this location would be up on the north side, so you can take the, interstate to get around downtown. You don't have to go through downtown. And the other thing is the ownership they had the fans support. Right. But the ownership was messed up, and it was a corporate ownership deal. And I've heard the horror stories. But the other thing is the group that wants to bring them in, they looked where the majority of the season ticket holders were from. And that's why they chose the location they did on the Fulton County, Forsyth County line. So they looked at that. They also looked at where are the rinks in the Atlanta metro area. There's 7 rinks. They're all in the northern side of the metro area. So that's where another thing. And then, that's where a lot of the the money is. And it's not cheap to go to hockey games. So they're looking at going, there's a lot of income in the northern part of the city. So it makes sense. So we'll see. Now, you know, so I'm hoping.
I hope you guys get it.
Yeah, really it's a great market for it. It really is. And so many people I've talked to, hockey fans or not, they want to go back to games. They enjoyed going to the games when the Thrashers were here, and you know, they'll make an evening of it with the family every now and then, which is good. So I know you still paint masks, and for those young and old goalies who might be in the market for getting their masks painted, how do they get in contact with you to maybe get that process going?
You can contact me at frank@sipperdesign.com or franksipperdesign44 @gmail.com.
And I'll put those.
Or you can go on my website and check it out too.
Yeah, and I'll put links to all three in the show notes to make it easy, because I know goalies aren't the brightest bunch in the box, and we need things made easier for us because we're not going to remember because of all those pucks to the head.
I'm also on Facebook too.
That's where I found you and reached out to you. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, well, Frank, I appreciate your time. It's been fun chatting. I feel like we could probably talk masks all day because it's one of the things I love. In high school, I took an art class, and every different medium we had to try or design type, I always incorporated a goalie mask. In fact, one of them was that beautiful Hawks Jeff Hackett mask. And my art teacher would get so upset. And I finally convinced her that goalie mask art is art. And if I could incorporate that into every different project, I should get extra credit. And she didn't agree with the extra credit part, but she finally relented and was like, okay, you can do some kind of goalie mask for every project.
Lucky you.
Yes. So again, thank you. We will keep in touch. And, you know, when I'm ready to pull that trigger on getting that mask painted, I might be reaching out to you, because who better to get that design done than you, the creator of it.
Not a problem. Just let me know whenever you're ready. I'm
will
here.
Do. Well, thank you again, and have a great rest of your night.
Okay. Thank you very much. You're truly appreciated.
Many of Frank's designs were the masks I admired from the 90s to today. If you're in the market to get your mask painted, visit sipperdesign.com or email Frank at frank@sipperdesign.com or franksipperdesign44@gmail.com. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube simply by searching for Wash Up Goalie, and I'll pop up. Visit washupgoalie.com for some great hockey-related content, my Beer League hockey video highlights, and of course, all podcast episodes. If you want some Wash Up Goalie or Tendy Talk apparel, be sure to visit my Threadless shop by clicking the merchandise link on my website. Be sure to check out the full lineup of hockey-related podcasts on the Hockey Podcast Network as well. There are too many shows to list here, but shows like Press the Zone podcast, the Habs Culture podcast, and the Catfish on Ice podcast, which I've been a guest on, can all be found. I need to thank the band Zambonis for allowing me to use their music on my episodes. You can download their music on iTunes or listen wherever you stream music from. I'm working on lining up other goalies to talk to. If you are a goalie or have connections to a goalie who I should talk to, shoot me an email at washupgoalie39@gmail.com or send me a DM on social media. Let's not forget, if you are a brand that wants to sponsor a show, be sure to reach out to me. Be happy to talk. And finally, if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment on the podcast platform you're listening on. It's a quick action on your part that helps others find Tendy Talk. Until next time, keep your stick on the ice and your body square to the puck. Crack a donut.
Good news?
Well, Dave, the pond